Hello, and welcome to the NVIDIA AI Podcast. I'm your host, Noah Kravitz. With me today is Emil Hewage. He's the co-founder and CEO at Cambridge Bioaugmentation Systems, CBAS for short, a leading neural engineering startup in England. They're building neural interfaces that let AI drive bits of healthcare in people. I don't know if Emil would call it this, but I think of it as like a USB port for your body. CBAS was named one of the top startups at Y Combinator's Winter 17 cohort by TechCrunch and won the top prize with Accelerator Mass Challenge UK in 2015. And Emil was recently named to Forbes 30 Under 30 list. Emil, thanks so much for joining us and welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Noah.
So let's take my clunky definition of USB port for your body, throw that out, and why don't you tell us what CBAS is doing?
Yeah, so at CBAS, what we're all about is creating neural interfaces that empower AI to connect to our bodies and look after us. What we really care about here is chronic healthcare. These are conditions you never get treated with. Examples are sort of diabetes, heart disease, paralysis, even arthritis. And the time is sort of now to let AI sort of live with us alongside our bodies. So as we age, you know, the question we ask is, can we connect the technologies that we're seeing revolutionize other fields directly up to our organs and all those bodily functions? And the interface is the means to do that, a communication standard, literally the hardware that a surgeon could fit, and then a cloud interface that would let people develop new algorithms. And we make that full stack.
So I don't know how else to phrase this, but how does it work? So when the interface is connected to my body, what is it interfacing with? Is it directly with the nerves? Is it connecting to my brain? What's the process there?
Right. Our implants connect to this thing called the peripheral nervous system. And it's like the internet connection that lives inside our bodies. So your brain is talking, even subconsciously, to lots of your organs and your limbs. Mm-hmm. And we put our implants and hook it up to those nerves that are running through your body. And you might put it in a different place if you're trying to help to develop a treatment for the heart compared to a leg. But ultimately, we tap in directly to the nerves. And the implant has this sort of edge processing element. So for us, edge means inside the body. Right. And it can process those signals.
What kind of data comes out of the implant to the computer on the other end?
The nerve data is this really messy electrical picture. So we get 10,000 times per second. We get 64 megabits a second worth of data. It looks like a horrible, very hard to understand biological code.
Okay.
And then we have our own AI pipeline that processes that and turns it into a really stable, easy to use computer code. So we can tell you the status of what's happening, and we can give you ways of, you know, adding features back into the neural biological messy code.
Maybe we can paint a picture for the listeners and kind of walk through an example of what this might look like in action with an actual human being.
Yeah. So a really easy to grasp example is an amputee. So if you imagine if you're unlucky enough to lose a limb, what suddenly disappears is both the feelings you might get back from your hand if you touch something, and also if you think about moving your hand, if you've lost your hand, you can't move that anymore.
Right.
And when we give someone our first product, which is called the PID, it's a standard, it looks like a USB port for the body, we can provide touch for anything you connect to the outside of that port. If you get any robotic limb, any prosthetic limb, you know, our ideal is someone buys something from Amazon, plugs it into our port. The moment that's connected, all the touch sensations stream back into your body. And the moment that's connected, no matter how it's been designed, if you think about moving it, it moves for you.
So it's an input-output system.
Yeah, it's an input-output system.
That is fascinating. And as much as we can do in a podcast, and obviously not asking you to divulge, you know, your business secrets, but how did we get here? How does the... I'm thinking of, you know, devices ranging from a thermometer to something. I have a little bit of family background in biofeedback and neuroscience and stuff. And
right. So
kind of more advanced devices that can track electrical patterns coming from the brain, that sort of thing.
Yep.
But where I get stuck is going the other way and being able to use my thoughts to control a prosthesis.
Right.
And so what can you, how can you describe that process?
I think your first point is really, really key to understand. There are already plenty of products that people use that are somehow talking to our nervous system in one direction. So
right.
pacemakers for people with, you know, heart mm-hmm. conditions, and for people with types of epilepsy, you get stimulators. And so we know when we put electricity back into the nerves, our body does stuff. And it's for us, it's actually equally the same. If we can measure those signals really quickly and have looked at the system for years at a time, which we have, we can read the code. We can go, actually, your body is wanting to move an arm, or your heart is trying to go into this sort of overdrive mode. The idea is that that is the core. You need, biology has been using this code in all of us for thousands of years, millions of years, and we're just going, oh, it's all electrical, and it's a code. We figured out the internet. Now we have to listen to biology's version
of it. You're learning to read it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Incredible. How did you get started with this? Do you have a medical background, engineering background? How did you come to build the port?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I started the company a couple of years ago with a great friend of mine called Ollie, and I was a machine learning and neuroscience researcher. So I have been involved in big one-off studies that would connect, you see a news article like, man plays guitar hero with mind.
Right.
Right. So technically it's been possible in these like huge DARPA funded type studies for a long time. And I used to be one of the researchers who'd have to help tune up a computer to listen to an interface.
Okay.
And Ollie, my co-founder, actually was a biomaterials researcher who was always fascinated about the problem, which is kind of, it's dumb, but it's the thing that holds everything back. If you put something engineered inside your body, it's just not natural to be there, and it starts to scar tissue, it starts to cause lots of havoc. And so we both really cared about making an impact for people, right? We have friends who we could think about developing robotic limbs for, as an example. And we were in a pub in Cambridge, and Ollie was like, we should just make a really good limb.
Yeah.
Emilio, you could do the neuro stuff. I will do the really cool connection into the body. It will be different to everyone else's because it will really be part of them. But then we realized, actually, if we just did that hard part, which is the integration,
yeah,
integrate biologically, integrate electrically, we should just make the rest of it open, let everyone develop. Because even whatever we made after that point, we'd be amateurs.
Right, right.
And we want pros to build on top of it.
Right.
And that's where it kind of came from.
Wow. What's the role of AI in what you're doing? You mentioned a little bit about, getting the messy biological code out, and
yep,
you've developed a pipeline. What can you say about that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we see a way we use AI, and then we see a way we hope other people develop more AI to go into the body, right?
Great.
So the neural interface is all about making this sort of new element of edge that is actually inside us. But our own AI pipeline is basically solving this problem, which is the fact that the nervous system is always difficult to understand. It normally takes a couple of like really smart grad students a few years to solve the problem for one person. And, that person, if they went home with this cool brain tech, it would slowly stop working, things would change. And instead of that manual setup process, instead of needing all this custom tuning, our AI can instantly read neural data and translate it into stable code. And it can keep personalizing itself for a person. Our AI is literally taking something 10,000 times per second that is a messy, very biological, electrical mess, and then translating it.
Right. And so you said you think of it as AI at the edge, living in the person's body.
Yeah.
Do you push out, updated networks, updated models to deploy?
Yeah. So the main things that are needed, across lots of edge computing, right, is to be able to do this kind of federated learning. We know for sure that once we get our patients trying out these devices in bigger and bigger scale, we will be understanding nervous systems better.
Right.
But unlike in apps where it's nice to have a protection between your personal data and this big, mass learning that's happening.
Right.
We from the start have to build in these approaches. So yeah, we need to, and we do have ways to update the models, online all the time. And we work on ways to make sure that means that your model, your neural translation model is personal to you, but also it doesn't send any of your personal bio data back to us.
Right.
And that's that's something that is a, something we've become known for. We released something really cool actually last year about that.
Very interesting. I'm talking with Emil Hewage, who's the co-founder and CEO of CBAS, Cambridge Bio-Augmentation Systems. And they're developing neural ports into the body to use AI to help us live healthier and communicate with prosthetic limbs and all kinds of amazing medical stuff. So how far along are you now in terms of the technology itself? What stage, if you can put in these terms, is the company at?
Yeah, so we built and released last year the world's first live streaming chronic neural implants. We, over the past year, have built up the world's biggest data sets about peripheral nerves. And in about a year and a half, we'll communicate some of the output of the human trials around our PID, the first product. So the biggest sort of phase we're in right now is honing and development of the core neural processing stack.
Right.
Which is where all the gains are going to be made technically. It's a really exciting time, actually.
Yeah, great. Is this potentially something that somebody could choose to use to get into your ecosystem to augment their body, not necessarily to replace a limb that was lost, but to augment what they already have?
Right. I think you see exactly where this can go. I think right now, the most important impact we can make is to help people get back to a level of functionality that they may have lost for whatever reason.
Yeah.
That is the real mission of the company. That's what we're trying to build especially in our first product, the PID. But actually, if you think about it conceptually, you know, it's arbitrary how that distinction. So if you get someone back up to the point where they could, you know, play as many sports as they used to be able to play, run as fast as they could run, or you know, play the piano as well as they could before, from a tech perspective, you go, okay, how about we turn that up 10 more percent?
Right.
What we believe is the first use cases will be medical, because these are right now really pioneering products we're making. But sooner than you might imagine, within the next 5 to 10 years, you could imagine most of us as we age being given an implant where, you know, you talk to your doctor and the doctor goes, look, you know, you're at risk of all of these conditions. There's this whole ecosystem of people who have figured out treatments that will be AI powered that could cover arthritis or heart disease, or you can keep naming the list.
Yeah.
So why don't we fit you with this? You've got like mild arthritis right now, but what it will mean is at that point where you get something super serious, you'll be ready and you can go from there. And I think that's the way the kind of mainstream like self-augmentation will happen first.
Right. When you're thinking about a system that interfaces with the body, but you're not in the business, at least not right now, of building individual limbs or pacemakers, so to speak, or whatever the device is for individual people. But you are kind of dealing with or grappling with the idea of reading that code that's coming out. And just from the standpoint of thinking about a protocol that third parties can use, how much difference would there be in my biological information, the code that's coming out, versus yours when it comes to, you know, a third party being able to read it and understand it, or with the help of your AI pipeline, and then build something for it? Are there these vast differences between people that you have to account for, even if the end goal is the same of, you know, building a prosthetic left hand for each person?
Right. So today, the differences between people for anyone building this technology are so vast that it's a problem. It's a barrier. It's why you cannot have mass-produced neural and bionic products.
Okay.
That's actually really, the cause of that is quite obvious. The biggest public data set available for any development is about 500 gigabytes. And you know, just one of our implants gives us 5 terabytes a week, right, about a part of the nervous system.
Yeah.
So you could imagine, you know, all of us being AI technologists, like we clearly just don't have enough data to work with this.
Right.
So it's definitely the case today that the big reason you can't scale products people make is because the customization is going to screw you up.
Yeah.
But what is cool is biologically, we have these anatomical like similarities. We have these differences between us that are actually kind of features about us that will be common with other people with our own sort of ancestry or lifestyle condition. And that's something we are starting to learn. So we see a future, we already see in our implants, this repeatability across the implants. That's one of our biggest value adds at the moment, is to show that we're starting to map the nervous system, understand it. You know, it's a different problem, but it's similar to like the human genome was ages ago.
Right.
So you have to make that first, you know, 0 to 1 of like, can you just look at the whole thing? We're doing that in this first effort to make people adopt the PID, right? So these, for amputees, this will make enough of a difference for them that our AI will understand how to work with them. And then from there, you can keep teasing out the detail. And hopefully in about 5 years, 10 years, it will be, you know, you would have a node.js for all the different neural systems and people. You'd be a developer. You wouldn't care. You'd be fine.
It sounds mind-boggling, and then it also makes perfect sense. It's pretty cool. So far along the path, what surprised you, or what did you sort of stumble upon that you weren't expecting that's made an impact?
The biggest thing we stumbled upon, which totally surprised us and actually now drives a huge part of our company right now, is that when we first started the company, we were this very diverse, very skilled group of people who cared about making one really obvious, cool product, like an open standard USB port. We're like, we don't mind if you don't understand why. We have people who we know will want it, and we will make that happen. And that's been our mission, and it continues to be the mission. Mm-hmm. When we showed off the R&D version last year, suddenly huge, big names in loads of industries were like, this is amazing right now. Like, this is a, this analogy of, the DNA neural sort of equivalent. So DNA is like this biology hard drive that people have been working with for years. We realized there's this huge floodgate of people who wanted to work with the nervous system in the same way. And people turned to us last year and were like, look, you guys have accidentally built like the microscope we need for the system.
Right. Yeah.
And that was a huge game changer for us and also for how we've been able to, work with other people and get people to work around us.
That's great. So the notion of implanting a device in the human body to help the body function and be healthier isn't a new one. I know people who have pacemakers, for instance. And so when you're kind of moving from that into this sort of new generation of implants, what is that going to look like? Even as a business, as a marketplace, so to speak, like what's looking out into the future? What are you thinking about?
Yeah. So when we think about this next generation of sort of AI empowered implanted devices, the real difference we see is a lot of the hardware is going to standardize, right? You shouldn't be locked into buying somebody's product just because they own a patent on a metal case.
Right. Just like anything else.
Right. But the really exciting way it will end up looking like is this sort of personalized AWS and a cloud. It's like we talk about private cloud. You're going to have a whole tech stack that's in your body. Right. Ideally, open standards, all interoperable. We will be powering the neural interface layer of that. We're hoping to kind of build a whole ecosystem so people can develop apps and products. And you as a person are being assisted by this bit of AI tech that lives with you every day.
Right.
And you just directly control it. And it becomes, like personalized private AI implants.
I mean, I'm starting to imagine now an ecosystem where my wearable, right? I have a wearable on right now on my wrist,
right,
is gathering data about my heart rate, and that syncs up with data from, the sleep tracker that I don't have personally, but I might have.
Right.
And then there's data from my electronic medical record, my doctor's feeding in, and it kind of all goes into the AI stack in my body and makes things better.
Yes.
Am I crazy or is that?
No, and I think you're exactly on the point. The beautiful thing about developing AI for healthcare is it's one of the only use cases where AI is specifically purely assistive, right? This, the type of AI we want, which is where computers are doing problems and solving problems that are just too hard for us to do.
Right.
Like you could not have a doctor sitting in your body responding at 10,000 times a second.
right.
It's the moment you see your doctor, she decides how you should be treated, and suddenly she has a tech tool that will just be with you for the rest of your year, and you only have to chat to her on the phone.
Right.
That's the most elegant thing about this new convergence of AI-empowered implants is they're your buddies. They're your assistants.
I like it. All right. So if people want to learn more about what CBAS is doing, where should we send them?
So if you want to hear more, come to cbas.global, our website. We're hiring a lot right now across loads of disciplines. So get in touch if you're interested in joining us. And also we have these huge data sets. We want people to start to work with us with them. So if you're interested in that, please get in touch.
Excellent. Emil Hewage, thank you so much for the time, for joining the podcast. And it's a brave new world. It's really interesting stuff, and best of luck with it.
Thanks very much.